Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Academic Athletics. With us, we have Srini and Surya from the All About FPL site. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, thanks for having me, mate. So I'm doing good. Glad to be here, and you guys have been doing a great job, and it's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for inviting us. Yeah.
How about you, Srini? All good?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm glad to be part of this podcast. My pleasure being here. You guys are doing a fantastic job, and yeah, looking forward to it.
Of course, with me, my co-host Ditya. How are you, mate?
Hi, Chris. Nice to be back on for another episode, and nice to be alongside with these two wonderful guys from the All About FPL website and blog. And I think Game Week 2 was quite, let's say, to be honest, a decent game week for all of us. So how was Game Week 2 for you, Chris?
Well, I cannot say it was an amazing game week, but yeah, I scored 70 points, no Wembanyama, which hurt, but I think I've had a good start. I'm sitting around 560k, which is, not really good, not really bad. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to build on this and, have a better season. How about you, Surya?
I think I had only one of Wembanyama and Antonio, so that probably answers the question of how my game week was. So I ended up with 62 points, which is not bad. But then when you look at the scores flying around on Twitter, around 70s, 80s, even with the captaincy blank, I feel a bit disappointed in my score. But yeah, it's early season and I always tend to have a slow start. And it doesn't bother me much of the variance at the beginning of the season. So it's going to be a long, long, long season. I have 36 more weeks to go. So yeah. So far, I'm pretty okay with my progress.
Yeah, I think Peter has smashed it so far. Everyone's flying from what I'm seeing. How about you, Srini? Do you have a better game week?
Yeah, I had a great game week. So I think Suya was just talking about me, like the guys on Twitter. I got 80 points despite a captaincy blank. I had both Wembanyama and Antonio, and I had Salah but as captain, but as 95% of the captaincy picks failed, so it doesn't bother me much. I had a very big green arrow. I'm now right around 100k in overall rank. So yeah, I'm enjoying the great start to the season.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Being close to 100k is actually such a good start. You can build on it. You can have a great season on it. Aditya, where are you sitting in the ranks and how was your game week?
Well, game week 2 was not that bad for me. I scored about like 75 points again with the captaincy blank because majority of us had Salah. But I had Wembanyama, Rafinha, who got me some points. The duo of Trent and Tsimikas got most of us a couple of points. And I was glad enough for Riyad Mahrez to come off the bench and get me those 6 points. So I was a bit disappointed seeing him on the bench, which was a surprise for me, which is not a surprise for most of us considering that he plays for Man City and is managed by Guardiola. But nonetheless, 6 points is great from Mahrez. Ings got 8. But the only concern for me here is Ivan Toney has been blanking. He's blank for about 2 weeks in a row. So a lot of things for us to ponder and, look at over the next few weeks. But before we move on, Ollie is sick and he is unable to join for this episode. But with regards to the last episode, he did take the risk and he kept it Greenwood. So he basically listened to us and he took the chance. And he covered up the points which he lost in Game Week 1. Game Week 1 was not great for Ollie, but he has managed to cover up points in this game week. Nailing the captaincy.
So guys, your website All About FPL has been doing really good over the past years that I've been in the community. So I would like to ask you, what was the idea behind the site, and how has it developed over the years, your journey behind this site?
So All About FPL is basically into its third season of creating content, and so to give you a background of how it started, me and Srini used to go to college together, so I knew him for close to 4 years before we started All About FPL, and we used to play FPL casually as an outside of FPL Twitter and all those communities. So we used to talk a lot about how our game weeks went, how our captain's blind and all that, and one fine day we decided to do something about, write something about football, and then we decided to write specifically about FPL because we both liked it, because in terms of football, he supports Man City and I support United, so we are poles apart in the teams that we support. But then our love for FPL was always ever present between us. That was something mutual. So that's how we started out in 2019. And so over the years, we have added so many people who have written for us. There are so many contributors from across the globe who are very keen to write for All About FPL for a platform like this. And we have always established this as by the community, for the community. So none of the content on All About FPL is charged for anyone to read. So it's completely free for access to anyone. And yeah, it's been a great journey. That's pretty much a decent summary. Now we are we have even made it to the FCA finals for the FPL editorial category. So it's been a wild journey. Yeah, but we have loved it and we keep pushing to do better things.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, what was the most difficult part about, you know, growing your side, in your opinion? What was the most challenging thing you found towards, you know, making it a bigger, having a bigger audience, you know, and trying to reach to more people, maybe?
As in, when we started, like, we were obviously clueless when we started. We didn't have a direction to go. Like, we, after a year of starting All About, if close to a year, then only we discovered about the Twitter community and started engaging in Twitter as such. So yeah, that was a good breakthrough. In Twitter, we got good interactions for the content we write, and it was being well respected on Twitter. We got good engagement on Twitter. So yeah, so basically, the most challenging thing was like finding like-minded people who are willing to contribute and who are on the same wavelength as me and Surya. Initially, when both of us started, we were facing like too much work to be done by both of us, and it was actually really difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And yeah, and I think it's something that you have to, you know, try to figure out when you're doing this. But I think you're doing a great job, guys. And, you know, the website has been one of my favorite places to go and read about FPL. So, yeah, I really appreciate your work and, you know, congratulations for that. And what are your thoughts or plans maybe for the future of All About FPL? Do you have any new ideas, maybe something you would like to share with us?
Thanks for the kind words, man. I think it's nothing gives me and Srini pleasure more than to hear from people say that is their favorite place to be, because we try to be as diverse as possible. We try to have different opinions from different writers so that everybody can get something out of All About FPL whenever they land on our website. So yeah, there's quite a few plans per se in place, as in we want to build something out of All About FPL, not just as a blog, so some sort of a tool that could supplement readers, say, that could give them stats in the future. So it's going to be a very long process for this to happen. But then the groundwork is being done for us to diversify and just not give people content, but also a place to check stats, maybe ranks. In a lot of it has been in the community already. There are very well established sites like Live FPL, there is Hub, there is Scout. We just want to put in as much as possible together and for free, not costing people anything to do, because FPL, you say, is being played by so many people from across the world, and a lot of people are still very young, and we don't want FPL to be a money spending machine for us. So our end goal is to build something, build a product out of All About FPL. So that's what we are running towards. It's going to be a long run, but we've made it so far. So let's try that as well. Yeah, that's the goal that we have.
I really like your approach there. And, you know, as an 18-year-old, I can relate to this, you know. I mean, yeah. Having membership cannot always be sustainable. You know, maybe it's a bit hard, you know, to manage spendings, you know, when you're quite young and you don't really have a personal income. So yeah, I think what you're doing is great, and I hope you continue doing that with the same success that you have been doing that for all these years. So let's move on to Game Week 3. I think it's a really interesting game week, since most of us have 2 free transfers, if I can recall. You know, most of the community have 2 free transfers, and I think it's a really, really important game week where, you know, many are going to try to catch on some bandwagons and, you know, possibly, you know, get rid of the players that have not been performing for them. So something I would like to discuss first is, you know, the Liverpool-Burnley game, which, you know, I think we all captain Salah, and I felt miserably so. Salah is someone that many are looking to sell right now, which in my opinion is a bit knee jerking, but Surya, what are your thoughts on this? And would you sell Salah from another premium like Son?
I don't. This has been time again coming back to the same question, because Salah has been a proven FPL asset, and over the last 4 years, nobody has scored more than 230 points, and Salah has consistently done it over the years. And blanks are supposed to happen. You cannot expect a player to haul all 38 game weeks. If that's the case, FPL will be very easy for all of us. So I don't think that it will be a massive knee-jerk movement to move from Salah to, say, someone like Son. You'll have to trust your premiums, especially considering the fact he just gave you 17 points the week before, which is quite a great start from a man like Salah, to be honest. And I think moving from one premium like Salah to Son, I wouldn't ever recommend that. Yeah. So frankly speaking, I do have Salah, and there has never been a doubt on my mind of moving away from him, not even once after game two has happened. Yeah.
Yes, Sri, do you agree with Surya?
Yeah, I totally agree with Surya on this aspect. Yeah, because Salah is nowhere going out from my team, because I don't see like good premium midfield assets to replace him. There is Son, but I don't see Spurs getting 4 or 5 goals in a single game in two or three matches once. Like, I see them getting 2-0s, 1-0, like scrappy wins. But with Liverpool, we can always expect those high scoring games, 4-5 goals quite often. So yeah, Salah is straight for it. We may have too many fixes in our team to worry about Salah. Salah is a set and fix at the moment for me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I also have many fires to put out before, you know, thinking about moving out a nail player who's going to score me many points over the season. So yeah, Aditya, would you have the luxury of, you know, removing Salah? Would you even try to do it?
Not in a million years would I try to transfer out Salah for Son. This is not something you need to play around at this point. Although I've seen on Twitter that Buna wants to do it for 1 week and then reverse it back. I don't know what's going to happen. So I wouldn't basically recommend doing that. But just stay on to Salah. I mean the Burnley game, I sat and I watched the game, and when he scored the goal, I was delighted. Finally, you know, the early kickoff captaincy is paying off, and then, you know, a few seconds later it's called offside. So anyways, but with Tsimikas and Trent basically covering up the lost points, it was, you know, more than I think sufficient. But in vast majority case, like Fernandes also blank, Salah blank. So not the so-called big hitters managed to return, but players like Benrahma, Antonio, Greenwood and Mahrez or Grealish, and all, if you tried captaining, are the ones who basically got you those chunk of points in a very unexpected game week in terms of big hitters return.
Yeah, I agree with all of you there. And I think, I mean, despite Salah, I don't think Liverpool have any else. You know, that game was pretty straightforward. Liverpool dominated, you know, barely. They were a bit open, so I think they're definitely a fixture to target. But I think we can move on to Manchester City, which, you know, they demolished Burnley 5-0. But I think I'm really torn on whether to actually invest in those assets, since the returns just seem to be too spread out. So, Surya, do you think it's worth investing in a City midfielder when the returns are coming from many sources?
They won final, and I think having Man City assets makes FPL even more fun, because one moment you own Mahrez, he doesn't start, and the other moment he comes in as a substitute and still scores and still gets you more points than Salah and Bruno Fernandes, to be honest. So that City team definitely creates lots of chances. They are going to score a lot of goals, and you will get those points. And it's okay to have those odd benching and odd substitution. That's fine with regards to me, because at the end of the day, even a 30 minutes or 40 minutes for someone like Mahrez or Sterling or Grealish to come off the bench, they could still do enough damage or get you those enough points. So if you're someone who's taking this high risk, high reward of strategy, I don't feel anything wrong in going for a premium team like Man City and just ride along the trend. Yeah, so that's my thoughts, and probably I think Srini is a big time Man City fan, so he can add some perspective from his own. Yeah.
Yeah, so since you're a Man City fan, you have to give us your opinion here.
Yeah, yeah. But In terms of FPL, I think so. I have Gundogan in my team. I had a price drop right before the deadline, so I'm planning to hold Gundogan for one more week against Arsenal. They looked very bad without, like, they were very bad defensively and they don't look to improve at the moment. So I think I'm holding Gundogan for another week, and then maybe I'm going to Rafinha for the fixture swing, what they have. So other than that, this is my perspective on my current status on Man City assets. Other than that, I think only Ruben Dias seems to be the safe and secure pick, because the other the fullbacks are also Cancer is also not nailed at the moment, with Zinchenko pushing him for a spot. Mendy looked out of sorts totally, and he is not in the scheme of things, and he'll be on in the cup games. So in terms of defense, only Dias is the set asset. And in attack, De Bruyne, I think De Bruyne is also a wait and watch only at the moment, because he will be the one who will be managed by Pep properly, and I don't see removing Bruno or Salah to get De Bruyne. So if you are planning to remove Bruno and Salah, I don't think so it's a good move to bring De Bruyne, even though he's a differential or something. And the front three is totally crazy. We know I'm totally suggesting not to go with City attackers at the moment.
Question here, because I have Gundogan too. Are you confident that he starts in the next game?
Yeah, I guess he starts against Arsenal for sure, because he had a decent game and he was his injury looks to be totally gone. It was a shoulder injury, and Pep told he had trained before the game and he started too. So I don't think injury will be a concern, and rotation also won't be a concern, I guess. It will be Rodri, Gundogan and De Bruyne if fit for the midfield three. And Jack Grealish, I think, will be... Jack Grealish is better playing in the front three, but he had to adapt to a midfield three for the game. But he still had a great game, but I think Grealish wants to play in the front three on the longer run. So it makes things even more difficult to hold on to Mahrez, because on the right wing spot, you have Mahrez, Jesus, and latest addition was Jesus. He started on the right wing and had a brilliant game against Norwich. So Mahrez, Jesus, and maybe Sterling too may compete on the right when Foden comes back to the left. Sterling also compete for the right wing slot. So holding Mahrez is also a risk, is what I feel. But yeah, as Surya told, he's a good risk reward option, and he performs really, really well against the smaller teams. He has a great track record against smaller teams. But yeah, I feel Gundogan starts, and Mahrez, I think you need to sell soon. But that may not be priority on your teams, but I think he should be a sell soon, as you have some more good players on the same money level or even less cost.
Yeah, I think Mahrez is less nailed than Gundogan is right now, and I think really is someone who's going to play the majority of the games, if you ask me, because I think it's a marquee signing, and I think his impact is there for the, you know, you expect him to change the team and, you know, provide something special. So, Aditya, have you got any players from City, and do you think of going there anytime soon?
Well, as I said earlier, I did have Mahrez, and I do have him at the moment. So when he was initially benched, I thought maybe it's time for Mahrez to go, and then I would get someone in like a Greenwood or maybe someone who's around 7.5, 7.6 to basically, you know, transfer Mahrez out and keep the funds and maybe get Calvert-Lewin or something else. But at the moment, with Simica's price rise, which I don't know how he's gone to 4.2. I think all of us in the community should be glad that if we have him, it's time for us to ship him out, but we need to do it as soon as possible. So for me, I think my priority at the moment is probably to maybe get rid of Simicas and take the point one out. And I would probably play Mahrez against Arsenal. As Srini rightly said, Arsenal looked dreadful against Chelsea. There was like literally no defensive organization. They were just open up a bit. And when Ben White didn't play, I think he's ill and he's got COVID. And I think even Tierney kind of got injured towards the end. It was, I think, Nuno Tavares who played, and Cedric and all. I think they didn't look that great defensively, and I think Man City have a chance to go at them. And mind you, I think Arsenal and some of the other teams are playing in the League Club. So Arsenal play against West Brom, I think, on Thursday or Wednesday. So we'll have to see how these teams play in the League Cup, see what kind of lineups have been put, and we'll have to decide on that. But for me, I think at the moment, I might keep Mahrez against Arsenal and just use my one transfer to get rid of Simicas and then go with two transfers, I think, for game week 4, that's after the international break.
Yeah, to add to it, I think Mahrez should be a definite hold for the game against Arsenal. I think he starts that game. Arsenal have conceded like 7 big chances so far from 2 games, which is the highest in the league, with Brentford being one of those games. So they have been very poor defensively. And Mahrez usually has a good game when you don't have a good left back. And Tierney may not start against City as it stands. So yeah, Mahrez is a definite hold.
To add to that again, if you watch the Arsenal-Chelsea game, Rich James was actually having a field day down that Arsenal left flank. Tierney was always missing his man, and I think Mahrez will have a good opportunity to return from that side. So I think if he starts as a right winger, he's got potential for some, you know, a good haul. So yeah, I think I'd keep him too personally for this game week. Moving on to, I think, one of the hottest properties in FPL right now, in the name of Calvert-Lewin. I don't know if anyone of you has him, guys, but I don't. And I'm personally penciling the move in game week 4. So, but besides Calvert-Lewin, do you think there's anyone else from Everton worth looking at? Maybe the cheap midfielders. Would you try to cover that attack with them instead of him, Surya?
Yeah, I think this question is more open. If you would have asked me before DCL was confirmed on penalties, but now at 8.1 million, I think probably he's close to a race today. Again, seems so. But at 8.2 million, you get a striker who gets a ton of chances, and Rafa Benitez's sides are always built around their prime striker. So he's going to get the majority chunk of the chances, big chances, and the crosses. He's always known to be a very good header of the ball, and he's very is such a great aerial threat. And Benitez has been trying to spam crosses all from all parts. So you have those, and then you have the penalties in mind. And I think DCL is very much essential, and probably a lot of transfers could be from Ings to DCL in game week 4 because Villa's fixtures turn then. But if you ask me, do we need to double up on Everton, or if any other Everton midfielder has caught the eye who's worth investing more than DCL at the moment? I don't think so. There is not one assert that would stake a claim ahead of DCL in our team. And Everton's defense too isn't that great. I think Dean has been just the same FPL as we've known last year, as in good on the eye but poor on the points. So yeah, I think one Everton asset I would say would be DCL, and I wouldn't go to their midfield as of now. Yeah.
Would you take a pound on the Doucouré and Grace instead of DCL?
Yeah, Doucouré has been playing absolutely brilliant over the last 2 games, getting a goal and an assist. He has been getting back the old Watford Doucouré from what I can see. He's been playing in a more advanced role, getting those shots, and he looks to be enjoying this box-to-box role rather than the defensive role which we had with Everton last season. Rafa had openly told this season Doucouré would be more attacking before game week 1, and he was also a differential, ultra-differential pick for game week 2, and he performed really well and got an assist against Leeds. So, yeah, and with this style of play, what Everton have right now, getting in crosses from Gray, Townsend and Iwobi, and with DCL and Richarlison attacking the box, Doucouré looks to be the third person getting into the edge of the box for the follow-up or the rebound that comes in. So Doucouré is a very, very good option if you want a 5.5 midfielder. And I think this is a season where Doucouré gets 10-plus goal contributions easily. I think I'll take a 5.5 midfielder who gets me 10-plus goal contributions without a doubt. If your team structure wants a 5.5 midfielder, I think Doucouré is one of the top options at the moment.
Yeah, I think when he was playing for Watford, he was a threat in that cam role. And I think now that he plays in the pivot with the advanced role he's given, he can be something like Gundogan. I think his role is very similar to Gundogan's role last year. And I think he could, you know, be a great, great player at 5.5 million, which is honestly like a really, really good enabler, you know, when you need to squeeze the premiums in at some point in the season. So yeah, but I would definitely prioritize Calvert-Lewin, who's got penalties now too, which I find really important for a striker. Ditya, I think you agree too. Do you have him already, or are you planning to get him to game 4?
No, I don't have him at the moment. And yeah, I think since most of us will definitely have two transfers for Game Week 4, I think the switch from Ings to Calvert-Lewin makes sense. So I can probably do Mahrez out and then maybe get the extra funds to get in Calvert-Lewin, because I think he's what is Calvert-Lewin price? I think he should be like 8.1, right? I think he could even go up to today, so he could be like around 8.2. So we might have a problem there. But so most of us need to get that 0.1 out of Tsimikas very quickly. So that is what is going to happen now in the next few days. But I'll be looking to get in Calvert-Lewin in game week 4, and since he also takes the penalties now, that is. Is him basically having an edge over somebody like Richarlison. So even Richarlison is not a bad shot, but with Calvert-Lewin, you know, taking the extra penalty and the set piece is where I think it's worth putting in the extra 0.6 or 0.7 to get him in.
Was a really open game. I think it shows that both teams have the capability to score, which brings me to my next point. I mean, Leeds have from game week 3, and then from 5 onwards, I think they've got one of the best fixtures. You know, they have Burnley, then Liverpool, but then it's full of green: Newcastle, West Ham, Watford, Southampton, Wolves, and Norwich until game week 10, which makes their assets really, really attractive to me. And I'll be have Ailing, but I'm looking at Rafinha, Bamford, even Harrison. So are you guys looking to triple, maybe double up on them? Given that they have a great fixtures in the upcoming weeks?
Yeah, actually, I have Bamford in my team from game week 1. So it was a bit of a gamble to go Bamford right from game week 1. I think it could have gone better, but I did stick to it because he did score against United last time. So I thought he could still be having a good chance this time. And as you said, the game week 4 is the only fixture that is a bit of a wobble there, but then keeping in mind they put they gave Liverpool a run for their money last time. They ended 4-3 once in the very first game, and then they held on to them for a draw the next time they faced that Ellen Road as well. So they play well against Liverpool too. And Bamford and Rafinha, a double up from game week 5, is a very promising thing. So I think one of DCL and Bamford should look to kick on from then. Yeah. And doubling up on them is also a great idea. I wouldn't say anything against it because I already have Bamford and I'm already looking at Rafinha as my Barnes replacement after game week 3, because game week 3 Barnes plays Norwich. I'm looking to give him a final chance, and then if nothing happens, probably Barnes to Rafinha is what my planned move is at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, Rafinha is someone you can get easily. You know, with if you have 5 or 4 midfielders, you can downgrade them to Rafinha. Srinya, do you have the same plan?
Yeah. As I told, I'm on Gundogan, and I think from game week 4, I'm getting Rafinha for Gundogan and saving up the extra money to maybe upgrade Tony to DCL. I still have some money in the bank, and I want to go to Tony to DCL. But I have Ings too, and it will be a close one to like who to remove to bring in Diesel. But Diesel is for sure coming into my team, and Rafinha is also coming in for Gundogan. But the one who replaces, who makes way for Diesel is still a question. So yeah, I'm waiting till game week 5 to make that move.
Yeah, but you know, I think we're all looking at the attackers, and I have an Eiling on already, so I'm really wondering whether Leeds are going to tighten up in those upcoming weeks, because they have to be conceding lots of goals in the first 2 game weeks. So, Aditya, do you have any defenders, and would you also get defenders despite, you know, the attacking form that they're showing?
Well, although, as you said, their fixtures, you know, they look good after game week 5. Right up to game week 5 to game week 10, it's all good. But since you have Luke Ayling, I think it's better if you keep hold of him. And if I probably look to get in a defender and who's priced 4.5, I might go and get him in. But at the moment, I'm going to stay away from Leeds' defense because it's not looked that great. It's been a bit shaky. And again, with regards to Bamford and all, I'm not a bit convinced yet. I need to wait and see. But I did have Rafinha, and I still do have him. So I'm going to just keep hold of him. And again, if Bamford looks good over the next game week or the next 2 game weeks, maybe game week 3, game week 4, then if I have enough money in the bank, I could probably do Tony to Bamford. So again, Luke Ayling, if you have him, it's a definite hold. But if you're looking to get him in, I would say just wait for the next 2-3 weeks and see how Leeds play. And if they tighten up a bit, then I think it's worth getting them.
I mean, probably the one they're going against United, so maybe there's more where that came from. Maybe he's the next Dallas. You know, he's going to be what Dallas was last year. Well, at least I'm hoping, really. So on to the next topic, which is something which I think concerns most of us. And that is Aston Villa, who I think many saw as a really, really good fixture-based, you know, team. You know, I doubled up on their attack, and I think many have a defender maybe, or at least one attacker. Since their fixtures are quite woeful after game week 3, what are you guys' thoughts on them, and who are you looking to get rid of all your assets, even Ings, with someone who could even score against the bigger teams?
Yeah, so... I'm a United fan, and I've seen Lukaku evolve for a very long time. And I can assure you that he's not the same one who played for United a couple of seasons back. He's gone under Inter. He's taken up a huge responsibility of being the leader of the team, and not just the Inter. It's with the Belgium national team as well. So now he's a striker at his prime. He's 29, 30 currently. That's the age when the strikers peak. And he literally bullied the Arsenal defense last time. And basing your facts on Lukaku doesn't score against big teams from his previous experiences at Everton and Man United is something that isn't fair. And also for the fact that FPL and Premier League is a fast evolving stage, and you cannot hold your decisions based on things that happened a couple of seasons back. So I think getting on him right away is not a very bad thing to do at all. But the problem is how to get to him is a big question, because most of the teams are stacked up with two of Bruno and Salah, and then probably a third mid like Son or Mahrez in the 9.5, 10.5 range. So you need at least 2-3 transfers to engineer a move to get him in. And if you ask me, is it worth doing it for a hit? No. But then if there is an opportunity for you to get him in directly, I would say go for it, because he looks completely different. He's hungry. He's here to prove himself as a striker for a big team. And he's not just as a striker, as a leader. And I'm sure he's going to get 25-30 goals easily this season. Yeah.
So would you actually try to stretch a move for Lukaku Twings at the moment, or maybe by game week 4?
Yeah, I don't think so. I can make the move from Inks to Lukaku by game week 4. As Surya rightly mentioned, it should be a long-term plan to get in Lukaku. If you have both Bruno and Salah, you can't take three players right out at the moment. So I think from game week 7, I'm targeting Lukaku, where he has a very solid run of 5-6 games. I think he'll also be set by then. And as Tuchel pointed out, he'll be mostly on penalties, as Tuchel wants the primary striker to be on penalties and getting those big goals. So I firmly believe Lukaku will be on penalties, and it will take some 3 or 4 games to gel more with the front three, and he'll be having a cracker of season if these games produces assists like what he did the other day. And I think I'm targeting Lukaku from game week 7, where he has Southampton, Brentford, Norwich, Newcastle and Burnley in the next 5, from 7 to 12. So, till then, I think I will be making a plan to get in Lukaku. Maybe save money elsewhere, and I'm not sure still. But Ings to Lukaku may be the move. But I think I'll be saving money by selling Gundogan for Rafinha, making small changes to save the money, and then go bang on for Lukaku from game week 7.
So, would you think of holding Ings from the tough fixtures, maybe, if you have other fires to put out?
Yeah, I'm surely holding Ings for game week 3 against Brentford, but after that I'm not sure, but because he has Chelsea, United and Tottenham in the next 3 or 4 games, so I think I'll be maybe downgrading Ings to a smaller striker, and then maybe upgrade one of my midfielders to, I'm not sure, like it's like there are two structures to my plan what I have right now, like Gundogan to Rafinha and saving the money and going from Ings to DCL, or maybe go from Ings to a non-playing 4.5 Watford striker, and then engineer the move from Tony to Lukaku.
Aditya, would you keep Ings, or are you looking to, you know, get rid of him as soon as possible? And what are your views on Lukaku for the moment?
Well, I think this topic has been covered very well by both Surya and Srini. And as Surya rightly pointed out, it's not the same Lukaku who left United. Now, this Lukaku is much better. He's much experienced and he knows how to play the game much better. And which he really did against Arsenal and he bullied Pablo Mari. But then the second half, Mari could probably get back to him much better. But again, from game week 7 onwards, Lukaku and Chelsea's fixture, I mean, they do look good. And again, you need to break your team. There should be a proper structure and a plan which you put into place if you want to get Lukaku. And at the moment, I have not really looked at it in that detail. But as I said earlier, and I'll reiterate, if I want to get in Calvert-Lewin, I think it's Ings for me who goes in game week 4. Now, if I don't want to do that and if I want to get Lukaku, I might have to work around a bit in my midfield and get more, you know, money to basically do that. But again, that's why you have the wild card. Now, it depends when you want to play a wild card and when you want to basically get in Lukaku. So, there will be a chance wherein people will use their wild card in game week 4. Maybe restructure the team with Lukaku. Or there will be people who will use it around game week 6, game week 7. Again, to target Chelsea fixtures, get maybe Rudiger and then Lukaku and then attack on for the remaining, you know, 4-5 weeks based on Chelsea's fixtures. So, again, you have either you can use a wild card to structure your team or use multiple transfers for about 3-4 weeks to get Lukaku in. At the moment, I've not looked at that. And if you ask the question basically for me getting Lukaku, I might, but that is only maybe in game week 7 or game week 8.
Yeah, I was fine. You know, I think Lukaku's going to be, you know, a definite buy for me come game week 7 and 8. Because I just think with those fixtures and the possibility of Chelsea, you know, being in form, you know, title contenders, we have to, you know, dominate the smaller team. So I just think Lukaku will be there to score the brace and the maybe a hat trick or two. I don't know. I'm really positive there, but I just think he showed really good signs and he can continue from where he left off in the Arsenal game. Yeah. So since we have two Man United fans today with us, I would like to discuss the United Southampton game, which was a really interesting one. Since I think it was a tactical, you know, masterclass from Hasenhüttl. I think he set up the team really well and he actually closed down United quite in the way he would have hoped for. So Aditya, since you're always, you know, talking about United and stuff, I want your view on the game if you've watched it and, you know, how do you think this impacted the United assets?
Well, to be fair, as much as I saw the game, the midfield was an absolute disaster. There was no control in the midfield. People were running like, you know, there was no organization in the midfield. I mean, I don't know what was going on. And, I mean, it was basically an own goal where Southampton scored. And it was Jay Adams and who had some, you know, let's say a verbal spat saying that with Fred and all the other stuff. But again, Fred had a very stinker, I would say, of game. Matic, he's finished, unfortunately. He's a bit not up to the speed as what we need him to be. But Greenwood, now the problem here was Greenwood played out wide, Martial played in the middle, and I think Solskjaer tried of doing something of a bit of flexibility in the front, wherein there's a bit of more movement and there's more fluidity, wherein he doesn't want player to stick in one particular place. There should be movement and flexibility, which I think Martial didn't provided that much. He's looked a bit rusty, he's come back from an injury and he's not up to the mark. He's not the same Martial as we have seen a few seasons back and he's struggling a bit now. But I think Mason Greenwood is doing a great job. And if Jadon Sancho plays the next match, if Rafael Varane plays the next match, and if Cavani maybe probably comes off the bench or if Greenwood starts, I think United will look a bit better. But the midfield is where we struggled. And Hasenhüttl's team basically targeted our midfield and Fred because he's a bit weak and he can be kind of more bullied and maybe pressed a bit more, and that's where the press release has been poor from our midfield. So with I think McTominay is ruled out for the next game, and there's been a lot of rumours floating around of United probably going in the market and getting in a midfielder. There's a chance Van de Beek could leave, Van de Beek could stay. So it's going to be an interesting week in terms for Manchester United if they basically sign a midfielder over the next week or so before the deadline. But again, overall, it was a poor game. You should not lose points at the start. But again, there's still, you know, about 36 games left. And there will be situations where even the other teams will drop points, and that is bound to happen. But if United manage to get a midfielder, then I think we should be much better. But with the addition of Varane and Sancho, we should improve gradually, and our defense also should get a bit better. But we'll have to see what happens with regards to the midfielders.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And Surya, did you watch the game?
Yeah, I think I could see Aditya as a United fan too, and I'm a Man United fan as well. And I could agree with a lot of points there. The midfield was non-existing. I think we were all over the place trying to have a control of the game, but it wasn't, because Matic is well beyond his prime. And Fred, you never know. One game he's on top of his game, and then he drops in a disaster class like that. And starting Martial up front instead of Greenwood was really a bad decision from Ole, because especially after the fact how well Greenwood played through the middle against Leeds, which probably cost us a lot of time and probably even gave up, took up the chance of winning the game. Yeah, so, but then this should improve. We will not be run over in the midfield a lot of times this season. So I think with probably McTominay back and with Sancho on the wings and Varane, I think we'll be able to hold our defensive line pretty much, and this should improve. But yeah, one answer to keep an eye out is definitely Greenwood, because when he's playing through the middle, he's lethal. He's known to finish his chances better. And yeah, so that's my takeaway from that as well. Fred was absolutely bad, and Martial too doesn't look at all as a United number 9 at all in any forms. Yeah.
Yeah, so we reckon that Greenwood will, you know, play as striker in the next games instead of Martial. And I'm expecting also Sancho to come out and feature at the wings. So probably, yeah, I hope United find their form, I think. But do we see the Wolves game as being a tighter one? Do you think it's going to be easier for them? Or is it going to be a really tough game?
Yeah, so if you would ask me, United will look to bounce back. And I personally feel there is goals in that particular game. Of course, there is difference in opinion based on how they played against Spurs, but Spurs never looked to attack after they scored the initial penalty. So I think Ole will go all out against Wolves, and it should be a very comfortable two goal margin win for United. Yeah.
I think that's encouraging coming from a United fan. I really hope they, you know, they finally get a clean sheet so we can see some points from Luke Shaw, because it's been quite a disappointment so far. So since we're talking about Tottenham now, I think Kane's return has put some of us into thoughts. I mean, will Son become a better asset? Will Kane become a possibility, you know, when he's fit? And yeah, would you actually look at Kane if he's given to start the next games? Srini.
Yeah, talking about Tottenham, I think they were slightly okay to against Wolves and got the 1-0 victory. But with Kane coming back, he had a very good chance to score after coming back, and I think he should have scored that. But with Kane's future, I think it's still not certain, with Man City maybe going for the final push to get in Kane. And I think I wouldn't want to rush up to Kane at the moment, even though he's the best striker in the Premier League, he's the what all stuff you can. But I don't think you need Kane right now because of the transfer drama going in. I'd wait for a few more weeks and maybe see what happens, and if he's with Man City or Tottenham, we never know still. So yeah, I'm not going with Kane right now. Even if you want a premium striker, I think Lukaku is a good move than Kane at the moment.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Surya, do you think Kane's an option right now?
Not really, because at the same price point, you have someone like Lukaku who is looking very lethal. Kane, you do not know, because Spurs and Man City are equally new teams for him right now, because he has to get used to Nuno's system, and Spurs have equally been used to playing with Son up top right from the preseason, and he's just been coming back into the team. And if he goes to Man City, which is a little less likely, it will take some time for him to be integrated. I don't think Pep will put him out, or there is a necessity for Pep to do that, because it's not like City are very badly in need of a striker. It's not like that. They can still score goals for fun with anyone on the pitch. So yeah, I think it's better to avoid him for now. Let's see how he ends up and how he starts playing in those one or two games, because at the moment it's completely a big gamble to bring him in, and I don't see any value in that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would hold off for now too, because it's Tottenham. I'm not really a high scoring team. They did score some great goals last year, both Kane and Son. But I just think for now, with all this uncertainty, Son's minor injury, I think I would hold off from then. Even though the fixture against Watford and Palace in game 3 and 4 is really, really, a really good fixture to target. But I just think with all this uncertainty, we might be falling into a trap. Even with Moura or Ali, I think both have, looked pretty decent, but I just can't be sure of who starts if Kane is back in the XI. Aditya, would you go for one of the cheaper options, or are you still worried that they might just not do anything?
Well, the way Spurs have played over the last two games is basically counter and just play in the counter attack and try to get a goal and then just see out and defend well. But again, we'll have to see whether Kane stays or not. And it looks like he's going to stay. But we never know. There's still a week left and anything can happen. And there's a lot of drama basically related in the last day. But again, Moura and Dele Alli. We did speak about both of these assets few episodes back. And it turned out that they both are playing now. And it's a bit tricky for me. Now, if Kane starts, I think Son will go on the left and Moura will go on the right, and probably Dele will play in the middle with Højbjerg and somebody else in the midfield. So I think Moura and Ali should play, but it depends what Nuno wants to do, whether he wants to play two strikers up top or whether he wants to play Bergwijn and on the left and Son, Kane up front and then Moura on the right. I think Lucas Moura is much more nailed, I would say, rather than Dele Alli. But with Dele Alli basically taking this penalty against Wolves and not Son, which was a bit surprising, but although Son had, I think, has a very bad record in terms of taking penalties. So again, I think I would go with Moura if I want to basically go and get a midfielder who's priced 6.5. So if you probably want to transfer out Harvey Barnes and you want to target the next two fixtures for Spurs, maybe Moura or Ali could look good. Other than that, Rafinha is probably the only other option at 6.5. Or maybe Benrahma, before I forget.
Yeah, I definitely would maybe take a punt on them. I think they could have, it could go one way or another, and I think they might go crazy or they might just do nothing at all. But, I think it's a risk that you could, end up taking it. I would understand the justification for it. So yeah, I think the most recent and the most shocking, maybe hot result of the weekend was Leicester losing 4-1 to West Ham. Even though they were down with 10 men, I think West Ham just played so much better even before the red card. And I think Moyes has really set up a team that no one likes playing against. Full of really, really good players in a really, really good system in which every player works together, and I think that makes them really, really hard to break down and face. So are you guys rushing to get Benrahma or Antonio? Do you already have them in, Surya?
I think I am planning to get in Antonio at the earliest, because I already have Benrahma, and it doesn't make any sense to not get them in, because David Moyes has done a phenomenal job. So I'm going to get him in. It's as simple as that. I'm not going to talk much on this regard because they both look essential, and I'm going to get Antonio in at the earliest. Yeah.
Yeah. Srini, do you have both?
Yeah, I have both. Thanks to them, I'm having a brilliant, brilliant start to the season, and this has been one of the best stats I have had in my 10 long years of playing the game, and I have to thank both of them, and thankfully they returned in both the games, and I'm firmly holding on to them and want them to increase price as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that Antonio Bernardo double up was really, really good, crucial for some managers who have had a really great start to the season, and I just I got Benrahma for this game week. I just couldn't live without him. I couldn't just wait and see the points flowing in. I'm getting none of it. So yeah, Aditya, I think you have Benrahma. So Antonio, I think you gotta get him. He's in the form of his life.
Well, this Mikel Antonio being in form is a really big headache for me now, because again, the problem is I don't have enough funds to get Antonio in. So the only way for me to do that is basically to downgrade Ings or to upgrade Ivan Toney. That is only possible if I transfer out Mahrez and get in Greenwood and then upgrade Toney. And then that means I'm going to use both my free transfers this week to get Antonio and then to get Greenwood. But then I won't have two transfers after the, you know, international break. Although the Premier League have released a statement a few minutes back saying that they have decided not to release players for international matches playing in red list countries. So that's what the clubs have basically decided. So again, I think basically Salah, he might not go to play. I don't know. They're playing two games. I think one is proper. They can play and another one is in the red list country. I'm not really sure. So I don't know what's really going to happen over the next few days. I think once we get better information, we can make our decisions. But this is something which has come out a few minutes back. So again, I think Antonio looks good. And I mean, Srini should be enjoying basically now having both of them. And he's quite smart and he's hoping for a price rise to increase his team value, and then once they, you know, drop off, he'll probably ship them out. But anyways, I think, as I've said, it's a bit tough for me to get Antonio in, but I think I'll wait till the deadline and I'll see if I need to trigger those moves or not.
Yeah, definitely. I think Antonio is just when he's fit, he can be just a proper FPL striker. You know, 7.5, the starting price was quite the bargain. I think he's only going up from what he's now, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him at 8 million soon. And I really hope he doesn't get injured, because that's going to hinder a great season, which is looking to, you know, come in the future for him. So now, I mean, Leicester, they were pretty bad. I think if you have Barnes like I do, I think you should. It's a tough call, but I'm personally going to keep him for the Norwich game and reassess after the international break. It's really tough because, you know, Leicester don't look really good. Barnes, he had a good preseason, but then again, in these games, he hasn't really done anything, which might not really be his fault. So do you guys think I should keep him, or, yeah, other owners, do you think it's sensible to keep him for, like, at least one more game against Norwich?
Yeah, I think I do have Barnes, and I think I'm better off answering this. So I think I would definitely hold, because that right side was very bad for Norwich, and City exploited that space. And I think it's better off to have Barnes, because he plays at the same place. And Barnes was substituted yesterday at 63 minutes. And I think he'll start, and he will want to, Brendan and Leicester and also Barnes would want to bounce back. And I think it's okay to give him a last chance and probably move to someone like Rafinha or someone in the same price range from game week 4 onwards. That's my current thinking.
Yeah, Street, would you, if you were Barnes owner, would you hold him for one more game, or would you, you know, try to get rid?
Yeah, I thankfully don't own Barnes at the moment, but things doesn't look good. But even though things doesn't look good, why not give him one more chance and have him for the game against Norwich? Norwich have been very poor at the back, and I think so, like Surya pointed out, Barnes get replaced around 60-70 minutes with Iheanacho and Daka both ready to come on. Barnes has always been the player who we can expect to play 90 minutes, but I think I'll fancy Barnes surely getting on the goals against Norwich City. So he's definitely hold. Norwich have been they're not set into the Premier League standards yet, with as they've conceded 6 big chances, which is the second most in the league at the moment. So
yeah, I think DTR, I mean, guys, should I keep him? I'm really leaning towards that, but yeah, I'm really hoping to keep him.
Yeah, I mean, for the game against Norwich, Barnes is definitely a hold. And then if he blanks, then I think is when I think you need to probably ship him out. But I think we've kind of discussed pretty much on this topic. But before we move on, with most of us now looking to transfer out Tsimikas, who do you think we should target and get in, someone whose price, let's say, 4?
I think that's an easy answer, because Livramento is the one that has caught my eyes, and even KWP, he came out of the pitch, but then he replaced the Perrot at left back. So I think he's nailed, and it is spot to lose, because he was really electric against United, because it's very surprising for an 18-year-old to put in a performance like that. So I think it's better to go for him. Of course, Amate is supposed to play a couple of more matches now that Vestergaard is injured. But Livramento is
looking to make that spot his own, whereas Amartey will lose immediately. One of Leicester's centre back are fit again. So, yeah, I think I would go him or anyone else.
I was actually looking at Brandon Williams because I think Norwich's current left back is, I think, Dimitris Giannoulis. I think he had a very horrific, awful game against Man City. I think he was probably subbed off right after the first half. So, I think Brandon Williams could play most of the games for Norwich. And I think over the last few seasons, what Man United have done is that they have put a clause in basically in the players that they loan that certain amount of games, you know, have to be played by a player if they loan out. So I think Williams, I think, should play for Norwich. And I think he also could be a one to keep an eye on with Norwich's fixtures. I think it should, which is turning, I think, around after game week 4. So, and Williams is a decent left back who is more offensive oriented. So I think for me, I'm, as you said, Livramento is one option, but I'm also looking at Williams. But we've not got a lot of information from Daniel Farke and Norwich saying how nailed he is going to be.
Yeah, I think Williams is a good option attacking wise, but for the simple fact he plays for Norwich, I think we won't be even able to get the occasional clean sheet or the lucky clean sheets, whatever. So I think as we have heard, Livramento is a good option. I think Duffy may still hold on to his spot even when Byrne and Veltman come back. I think what the manager mentioned in the post-match press conference was he talked very good about Duffy and about his comeback and stuff. So I think Duffy has been the best player for Brighton over the last few games, and I think he is for sure holding on to his spot at least for the next 3-4 games.
Who do you guys think should be the ones we should target for captaincy for the upcoming game week 3?
I could go first here. I mean, I think after yesterday, I think Antonio's just topping every chart. I think he's the standout against the poor Palace side, who have really not been in the best. They are even conceded, if I'm not wrong, 22 shots to Brentford. I might be wrong, but I think I heard that stat. So I think that's a great opportunity. Yeah, that it's a home game too, so the fans will be there too. And I expect West Ham to score plenty of goals in that game. Which could obviously, you know, it could go either ways, but I'm just feeling confident captaining Antonio, who might not have penalties, but I just think the form that West Ham and he are showing right now is quite phenomenal. You know, I wouldn't really cross out Bruno, of course. I think he was unlucky not to get anything from the Southampton game, even though United were really bad. So if United turn up, I think he's going to be involved too. And another option for me personally would be Ings, who against Brentford home game, Villa could find their feet soon. So yeah, I think for me, in my team, these are the best options realistically. How about you guys, Surya?
I think I was looking at Benrahma to be honest because I have him, but of course Antonio is the one that is topping the charts as we speak. But of course Bruno shouldn't be written off. I think United will come back strongly, and I think it should be a very close call between the West Ham boys and Bruno Fernandes, to be honest, from my point.
How about just Rainier?
Yeah, I think I'm also pretty much stuck with Antonio. I think we shouldn't think much in terms of captaincy for this week because you have a forward who has the best XG, most big chances, most goals in the league at the moment. So I think you are not going anywhere away from Antonio at the moment. Bruno Fernandes may be a shout, but I think in terms of the matchup they have, I think if you have an informed striker like Antonio facing against Crystal Palace and Bruno Fernandes against Wolves side, I don't think so. Bruno Fernandes racks up his case that much against Antonio.
Okay, so for me, again, I don't have Antonio. So at the moment, I'm on Fernandes. And if I don't get probably Mikel Antonio, I'm going to stick with Fernandes, or I could probably switch it to Benrahma. Or there's again Rafinha, and there's still Mahrez who plays Arsenal, and Ings who plays against Brentford. So we do have, the standout option for this week is definitely Antonio or the West Ham players. But if not, then maybe Fernandes or someone like Mahrez or Rafinha or Ings, I think, could be the options which we could possibly consider. So, do you guys want to add in something before we wrap up?
I think from my end, I think we did have a great time recording this podcast. It was a pleasure to be joining you guys in making this podcast. And I think good luck for you guys and for the rest of the FPL season as well.
Yeah, likewise, Aditya. Thanks for having me. And it was a pleasure. I think we spoke everything in terms of Game Week 2, Game Week 3. And also, thanks for having asking a few questions about the journey of all over FPL. So, it was a pleasure for me to join and for Ms. Srini as well. So, hopefully, we'll be back sometime soon as well. Thanks.
No worries, guys. It was great having you guys on. And for those who are listening, please don't forget to cast your vote. I think the FCA's voting has begun. So please do cast your vote. And you can cast your vote for All About FPL, I think, in the FPL editing category, if I'm correct. So don't forget to do that. And I think that brings us to the end of this episode. I think it was a pretty long one and we have covered basically everything that's needed for Game Week 3. And yeah, hope to see you guys in the next episode.